you book. You know, like nothing makes me more upset than having talking to the people who fucking built the building and telling us that we are shitty. Like, fuck you guys. Get the hell out of my fandom.
Do you feel continually let down by modern media? Do you miss the good old days, back when all that mattered was a good story and not some agenda? Do you have ambitions of picking up a pen and pad and fighting the creative war yourself? Then this is the podcast for you. Each week, I'm going to talk to a creator who said enough is enough and started making the content they wished was out there. Join us as we discuss the ups and downs of the self-publishing world. We want to help empower you to join the Iron Age of media. Welcome to Iron Age Marketing. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Iron Age Marketing. I am Nikki P here, as always. Today's guest, we have Mr. Jesse Blaze Snyder. How are we doing there, Jesse?
I'm doing great, man. How you doing? My campaign is like 3 days in and we just crossed $3,000. So I'm like, yes, this is all right. Good signs.
When the money starts rolling in 3 days, that's always a good start. Good starts can lead to good finishes is what we're hoping, correct?
Yeah. I mean, my last campaign was, you know, it was a success, but I was not playing to the market. I was doing something that was like a passion project for myself. And we did okay. But, you know, this time around, I really am playing the market. And, you know, I plan to cross $100,000 on this campaign. And, you know, we got 30 days to do it. And it's definitely going to be a journey before we get there. And a lot of things have to, you know, click together. But I believe they will, because I have charted a course that is pretty tried and true. And I spent a lot of time studying what was going on in the marketplace, you know, in the Kickstarter comic book space, before I decided what I was going to do and how I was going to do it. And specifically too, I was just, my last paid gig, like as a freelance writer, was for a company that's working in Kickstarter called Merc Publishing. And they've had a lot of success. I mean, like averaging like 60 to 70,000 per campaign. And it's just all titty books. And they just don't care at all about the creative people, the creative process, anything. They just like, they think that they're like squeezing money out of idiots and they're happy to do it that way. And they are not the only company like that. There are so many fucking companies like this across the internet now. And every company that's ever existed as a publisher prior to this is essentially this at the very tippy top of things. So for me, after they had this insane success of a book called Jinkies, they raised like $100,000 in a day. And Jinkies was just, hey, look, it's a Velma-like and a Daphne-like character. And look, there's nudity and sex in it and whatnot. And they thought this was like fucking high art. And, you know, $100,000 in a freaking day. And I just went, fuck these guys. Fuck these people. Like, I mean, they didn't even put my name on the campaign for the second issue of the book that I did for them. And then I worked on a summer special with them. They didn't put my name on that either. They didn't even tell me that it came out. They didn't send me any copies of the book. Like, just, they have no fucking care. And like, these are the people who are going to be the next level of freaking comics publishers. If people like us, if the meek geeks do not inherit the earth, it's time for people who know the way and are kind-hearted and cool and know how business should be happening to get into the business and start doing it themselves, because we need to like freaking form like Voltron and start helping each other out and making a real community with the people who deserve to be here doing this. And I'm sorry to say this, but a lot of people who are out here doing this, they don't fucking deserve to be out here doing this. They don't really deserve your fucking money. They are not put in the time to fucking be comic book creators. It takes fucking time. It takes fucking effort. There are comic book creators who deserve your money. And these people need to have people like me who can help them figure out how to put their shit out there onto the internet so that they can make the money that assholes who are just savvy about figuring out how to work the fucking internet and can like halfway draw a titty, you know, and like, you know, can get themselves to play the system and do this super 80s nostalgic thing or whatever it might be. There are artists. We are artists. The whole community of comics can take control of the industry of comics through this Kickstarter way, which is currently being used largely by people who don't really deserve to have the time and attention of the people and aren't actually writing books that are very good. I mean, at the tippy top of this thing, the Ripaverse stuff. Ripaverse has gotten all the fucking attention in the world. They've got a fucking audience. And that guy's not a very good creative person. He's a very nice guy. He seems to have a good attitude about everything, but the quality of what's being put forth there is not there. We need the great artists and the great creative people to being lifted up. And we need the artisans of the industry to start supporting them so that we can start to terraform this into something that mainstream people might come into and go, hey, look, there's comics. Comics are available and be able to find some stuff that's actually pretty good. Because, man, the level of quality between like books to book to book to book on these things, it varies so dramatically. And, you know, we deserve better than this as a community.
Well, and I don't, there's only one comic book that Ripaverse is intending to put out at some point that actually interests me, and that's Bloodruth, because I'm a horror comics guy. It's the only thing that looks up my alley. That's more of a, I have my own personal tastes. But the reason I think that we're in a situation where Eric's doing what Eric's doing is that for so many people, and creatives especially, the idea of marketing, it's a dirty word. It's like, oh, I don't want to do that. Like, I'm going to be a slime ball. And, you know, coming up in marketing, for me, the big thing is don't sell anything you don't care about. And if you believe you have something good, you should have no trouble trying to get everybody in the world to look at it. It shouldn't be a problem. You believe in it.
That's absolutely 100%. And can I just say something about that slime ball thing? Because, like, I feel that 100, like, 100 times worse than anybody. Because I'm fucking D. Snyder's son. Mr. Rockstar, whatever. Like, my father can't freaking bankroll every one. I don't have my hands in his pockets. Rich rock stars are not rich the way you think rich people are rich. Like, they, like, this is not a thing. I'm a 40-year-old man. I have a family of my own. You know, there's no relation here as sort of financial whatever. But the assumption is like, but meanwhile, the only approach that exists is boots on the ground, one to one. They've locked up all the social media. Unless you're willing to pump money into Facebook or money into Instagram, money into any of these things, they don't. There's no virility to your space. I have other ways now that I'm managing to kind of get the word out for myself. But even as a podcaster, which, you know, like, has been getting more and more successful, it really takes a level of success to be able to have enough of a percentage of the people who are listening to a podcast, which is very detached. You know, most people are listening to a podcast in the background. The idea that they might come back around and buy your product, or like, it takes a while. You have to have a big audience.
Well, and that goes with any kind of advertising. Like, personally, I look at podcasting as advertising. And then you have to look at what is a good rate of return. Like, what is, if you have 100 people listening, how many of those people could you actually expect to buy? And people have, I think, unrealistic expectations of what a listener to a buyer is. Like, if you can get 3% of the people to actually spend money on you, that's not a bad deal. Like, you're doing pretty good. So unless you're taking the time to build up a very massive audience, it's difficult to make the sales necessary. Like, if you could sell 50%, like, that's unheard of. It's ridiculous. Like, how does everyone listen to you loving what you're doing?
Well, yeah, and everybody's shooting for the huge group kind of thing. But the biggest thing that I learned from Merck Publishing was they were making that 60 to 70,000 off of an average of 860 people. 860 people were raising $60,000 to $70,000 for them. Dude, you know 860 people. We all have that many people in our life. That's not that many people. And that's 60, 70,000. You know, half of that, let's say you got 400 people and you're playing the system. And, like, you know, the Kickstarter system and all these things, you know, it's definitely a little bit of a game. But it's a game that's actually super fun if you have fun with it, in terms of being able to produce additional copies of your book in different and fun ways. Like, for the Fucking For Our Future book, we have a version of it that's going to be oversized, that's a poster book. And we've got a nude version that has all the nude posters, and then we've got a non-nude version that has all the non-nude posters. You know, and little things like that that make it special. And we're only going to print 250 of this thing. You know, we're only going to print these books during this Kickstarter. Once this is over, we're not going to have a huge overstock of them. We'll have a certain amount of overstock of them, but it'll be the next campaign. It'll be, there'll be a new cover, you know, and that new cover becomes the, okay, you know, onto that's the collectability bit that's missing from every other bit of comic books and anything that you have. And if the community really starts to come together and they start to select things, Kingmaker, what a good book. Let's get the word out about this. You know, fans of this medium, like if I wasn't a professional and it wasn't, it's like a conflict of interest and I was just a fan, I would be leading a fucking battle of fans, real people who actually read books, to find things that are worth fucking reading and then come together as a group and go, tell everybody to fucking buy this because we need this artist and we need this writer to be able to feed their fucking families so that they can make more. This is the problem. Like, there's great people out there. We can't afford to fucking make great shit because it takes forever. Because it takes so long, because it's so difficult, and nobody is helping us pay our books, pay our medical bills, live our lives. It is a dog-eat-dog world in the comics world, and in the Kickstarter world, that can all be changed.
So, a question I have for you in this, because you've mentioned it a few times, is that you're looking out at the market, and you're looking for what people are actually wanting. And how you've come from music like I have. There's this idea thing in a lot of people's minds, well, I'm here to make my art. And I wish it was like it was in the old days when they just made the beautiful songs because that's what they had in their soul. And few people realize that, like, the glory days of the 1950s when they think these guys just writing these beautiful songs, that was a machine pumping out hits. And everything that they did was very calculated to what the market would bear and what they could put out. And so it's like, where do people, like, separate this idea of, like, oh, I'm the puritanical artist versus, yeah, but I'm also a business person and I have to find the place that's at least going to want what I'm putting out there. Like, it feels like nobody gives any thought to who their audience is anymore.
I am very fortunate in the fact that I have always been audience oriented. I wanted to make comics for the big two. I was an audience member. I was a writer. And when I understood that there was writing that went behind all the scripts and, like, that, you know, there was somebody guiding these things, I set out to study that world so that I would be the best person for the job. And I was. And for a while, I was very devastated to go into independent books because that wasn't what I wanted to do. I wanted to honor all of these creators who I adored, and I wanted to do this thing. I had ideas about things that I wanted to do independently, creatively, or whatever, but that wasn't really my passion. So switching into doing independent books, you know, which I always thought was sort of, like, to a certain degree, was really difficult. It was a difficult to really get an independent character. It almost seemed like stupid. You know, the ones that would succeed, you'd go read that book or see that creator, and you're like, this creator sucks. They just got lucky. You know, like, so independent books always seemed like whatever, but I was a great writer. I wanted to go to the big characters. My first work in comics was at Marvel. My fourth work was for DC. You know, I created something for them. And, you know, and I just went from all the big companies around because I wanted to work on the IP. But let me tell every single person in the audience right now, break yourself of this fucking bullshit about you're the only fucking person in the room and I got to go fucking write a story about me and my experience. Fuck you. Fuck your fucking experience. If you are in the arts for this, you are not an artist. You're an egomaniac. That is not art. Art is love. Art is loving people. Art is loving things. You're not writing about you. You're writing about fucking being a fucking lumberjack, and you're writing about being a fucking super spy, and you're writing about being a ninja, and you're writing about being a mom, and you're writing about being a father. You're writing about doing things. You're writing about earning things and getting things and having things that are worth fucking having. You're not writing about your little fucking soul and the difficulty that you've had. You may be able to inject wonderful pathos and pain and shit that is real for you into stories that might matter to other people, but you're out of your fucking mind if you think that you are going to write that thing and this, anything coming from is not a story. A story is you going, I want this, and I'm going to fucking get it. and I'm gonna go and I'm gonna go and I'm gonna go and I'm gonna fight this and I'm gonna fight that and I'm gonna fight this until I fucking get it. That's what your audience wants to see. And if the audience sees enough of that, they don't care how your characters will get their happy ending. They don't care if God comes down and hands the happy ending directly to them, give them their fucking happy ending. They earned it. And when you are a sad sack writer who's like, I gotta write about all the difficulties, it's not about the fucking difficulties. It's about overcoming the difficulties. That is a story. That is your fucking journey. That is who you are. And if you think about an audience when you write, you will write stories that will appeal to everybody and to yourself and will have parts of you in it and will fucking matter. But it will be so much more than just some little love letter to your fucking broken heart, because nobody wants to read that. I promise you right now. And if you need any proof of it beyond me saying this fucking impassioned shit that I'm saying, because I really, like, seriously, so many writers are this. You're not a writer. If that is your fucking, if that is your north, I got to write about me and all these terrible, like, oh God, you're doing it wrong. You're doing it wrong. Read the book. Wait, read the book Wired for Story. Wired for Story, and you will find out that we are cavemen and we are not caring about your dialogue and about all your snappy little bullshit that you're putting into your story. We're caring about characters fighting to get what they want. And if they deserve it, then the audience is there. That's it.
Well, and I love that you're saying that, because that ties in so well with one of the things that I try and get people to understand. I'm currently working on my marketing book for people that are of the where we're directing this at. And the thing that I always try and send home is that marketing is about relationships. And the beauty is that story is about relationships. So if you can conceive of a good story and you can connect with people, then marketing shouldn't be difficult. It's just about finding those ways to connect with people. But the key is that everything we're doing is about connecting with people, period. End of story. And if you can't do that, you're going to have a hell of a time in any industry, let alone trying to do one where the whole point is to show people connection, to build that story into their life and give them something that, like, makes them feel.
Yeah. Do you know what permaculture is?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So within, you know, marketing and the making of a comic book, there's a lot of ways that you can get permaculture going on. And permaculture is basically when you're, like, setting up your farm so that it's one hand's washing the other, you know. Everything's sort of working in organic situation where no water's going to waste, and, you know, the soil isn't being left without any nutrients in it because you're doing your composting, and everything is just sort of one on top of another. Well, there's similar sort of ways to think about your comic books and your marketing. From a young age, and this was very difficult to actually have any success with at Marvel and at DC. Because the way they're structured at these companies is so fucking ass backwards. So it didn't matter. Like, the people who I was pitching to, they didn't have an appreciation for the fact that I was pitching them things that did not rely upon my name. It was a simple intellectual story pitch that could be pitched to an audience, and the audience could decide very simply whether or not, oh, that sounds like a story for me. And they were good stories that should be the type of thing that would make you go, oh, that sounds like a story for me. The best way you do this, and it happens like this for, like, bands as well, right? A band with a name that really means what the band means, like Rage Against the Machine. And you're like, ah, yeah, and these two things connect, right? My stupid book, Fucking for Our Future is a log line. A log line being a short sentence that tells you what the book's about. You got to be a little bit of a Sherlock Holmes to figure out fucking for our future. You're fucking? You're having sex in order to bring forth the future? For some reason, there's a need for sex for the future. This is a science fiction book about sex? Yes, it is. You can tell that just from the title. So titles, and being able to have a title that is marketable, that can come around to the whole thing. And then, too, once you have an interactive title in this way, right, we have a cover by Todd Blackwood where it's Uncle Sam. We want you fucking for our future. It's not Uncle Sam. It's our sexy robot. But geez, we want you fucking for. And we're tying the concept of.
I want that poster.
Yeah,
thank
you. And we're tying the concept into the bit. And then when you go into the Kickstarter, we're having fun with that concept. And instead of breaking up, you know, our images with eights, like sometimes people do just, you know, so you get one full image before you get the next image, we're breaking them up with 69s. And, you know, and we have an early boob special. And, you know, and we did some covers with our power armor that has these expanding boobs. And we've done a series of covers as the boobs are getting bigger. So you can pick which boob size. Like, once
you play within the culture.
Yes. You can play within the culture. You play within your title. You play within the system that you have. You know, that's permaculture. When you allow all of it to be as organic as it can be, this is the necessity of what we have to do. As it all kind of ties together and becomes one uniform thing, it's much easier for other people to get into it. And it seems richer. You know, it seems like a world, like, you know, you're falling into Middle Earth or whatever else. You know, we love worlds. So creating that through title, through simplicity in concept, you know, like these things are really important. And through picking a genre, a lane where there's an audience looking for something, you know, like that, that's it. You got to go into a space where there are people. I learned this with music. Like, I had a band that was a punk metal band when there was no punk metal bands. And maybe we were a little early for our time, but there was punk nights and there were metal nights. And I should have just picked one and started playing. But at the time I was like, I don't know, there's no night for me. But that's an important thing, being part of a group.
Well, nobody is learning this lesson harder than the big two right now, who have been pumping out books for years for an audience that they want to exist, but doesn't. Because if it did, they'd be buying the damn books, and they're not. Manga's outselling everything that DC puts out. Like, when you're having trouble selling Batman books, that's a problem. Period.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so many of the women who have, like, gotten into geek culture stuff and whatnot, and it's, you know, it's gonna, and listen, you may be out there and you may be the exception to this rule, but I'm not a man, I'm not your average man, and I know enough of the women in this space to tell you, many of them got into it because they were following boys like that they liked, and then a larger group of it got into it to manipulate the space because they were pretty, but not so pretty as to be in the rap video and the whatever other thing. And they switched into a niche of hosting, a niche of being a geek girl, reviewer girl, whatever, because there was a space and there is money in the pockets of the actual fans. And when I say actual fans, I mean people who fucking buy things. So if you're out there and you're a lady, and I do know plenty of ladies who are cool like this and they do buy things. So, like, I'm not talking about everybody, of course, but most of you, you know, ladies, most of your fucking lady friends, they're like me, you know, they're not buying the Legos. They're not buying the action figures. They're not buying the statues. They're not buying the comic books, you know, or maybe they have a bookshelf dedicated to the things they really like by Neil Gaiman. You know, there's a limited audience that is actually engaged in the way that somebody like you or me, Nikki, you know, I see your bookshelf back there, you know, like I had fucking 5,000 DVDs, you know, at the height of my DVD collect, because I am a fucking cinephile. I had the largest collection of individual action figures of 6-inch characters in Marvel, DC, Aliens, Predators, you know, fucking wrestling, Power Rangers, you know, every major character from animated, whatever, because I love this shit and I love these characters and I love toys. And that was, you know, I am a participating member in the economy. The people who talk about this shit online, like 90% of them are not members of the economy. They're not. The 90%, and it seems like 90%, because they are platformed. They are pushed forth and helped and benefited because they benefit the system. And all they do is keep the system being shitty the way it's been shitty. And it keeps the system from never learning its lessons, because they don't fall on their face the way they're supposed to, because they save themselves in all these weird little ways. It's very frustrating to people like me who have been studying it, going, man, this thing's going to fucking even out one day. And then, like, they pull another fucking lifeline. And I'm like, ah, great. They're never going to learn at this rate.
So here's something that I think is that will really benefit, like, what you're talking about. when you first contacted me on Twitter and you sent me your, essentially your resume, and the first thing I'm like, why in the hell is this guy contacting me? Like, I'm there's nothing, no way he doesn't know people that could do more for his comic book career than little old me over here in Ohio. Number one.
Yeah, but hold on though, Nikki, because it's about connecting to the people like me. Like, I don't want to go on some show where I would be talking to a bunch of assholes and trying to sell them my comic books. I am a comic book fan. I've only ever wanted to be a part of this community to connect to the people who are like me. So, like, you know, like, it's not a bad, like you, like, I'll be honored, Nikki, if just from this, you read my book and get the book. That'll make me happy. And then I come on again and we get to, like, that. Every person who is in the geek culture world, those are my people. I'm like, I happen to exist in this like other superficial world because I do, but it's not who I am.
Well, the thing for people to understand is that, yeah, if you're DC and Marvel, there was probably a time where doing broadcast marketing actually made sense, where you can waste money trying to sell to a whole bunch of people that aren't interested. But certainly for lone creators, you've got to go directly to the people that are going to be buyers. You can't waste money on people that aren't doing it. So, like, you coming here, you know you're talking to people that are actively going to be involved and spend money in it, as opposed to wasting $100,000 on people who don't give a shit.
Yes, and who may actually read the book. That, like I don't know, like, how aware you are, but I've become really aware of the actual reading numbers. And when you get an idea about who's actually reading Marvel books, you know, your average Marvel book, what percentage is sitting on the shelf? What percentage was bought by a collector? What percentage was read word for word, cover to cover? And I'm coming down to say it's something like 20%. And that is why it's so easy for this system to be manipulated, and it's so hard to find anything good, because there's only a few of us who are participating in the quality control process.
Well, I'm surprised when I go to my buddy, one of my good friends owns a comic book store, Captain's Comics, Toys, Games, and More, whatever, out in North Kingsville, Ohio. And I'll be out there, and I'll be talking to the other guys buying comics. I'm surprised how many of the guys I talk to, they're like, oh yeah, I buy these, but I don't actually read them. They're going to sit on a shelf until I retire. And I'm like, I can't even fathom, aside from the expense, but like.
It's like the guys who buy the toys and they're hanging on the wall. Like, I'm going to open that shit. Play with that toy.
Yeah. Well, what I also want to ask is, so one of the reasons I asked the question about, like, with your background and, like, I guess the connections and the industries that you've worked in, I have to imagine you've watched a lot of the downfall of what's happened in media very, very firsthand. Like, as you put it, 19, you were hired to work for MTV, and it's been a string of different companies in media since then. So, like, when I hear this from you, it's going to carry a little bit more weight than someone who's, like, just commenting as an outsider.
I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that have happened in the world of entertainment. I mean, just like a ton of them. And it's interesting too, because I had a manager for a while, and honestly, she was, now looking back, she was playing the game like she had been given the rule book, the modern day rule book of the, you know, what they are now calling woke society. I am like, I'm 41, but I am one of the original social justice warriors when there was a need. There was a long time when nobody was fucking pointing to how despicable we were behaving and so many different things. And it's so funny now, because our despicable behavior has been obscured by, like, that guy's being mean to me on the internet. And, like, the whole point of me pointing out the fucking despicable behavior, what we were doing to the Indians, what we were doing to the blacks, what we were doing to everybody in the fucking world, was so that we would do something about that. And instead, it's just become like an excuse to rage bait. And I'm too much of an intellectual to play that fucking game. So I pulled myself out of what was happening in entertainment and in general, because I was pissing people off. I was just sort of like, nah, man, it's a nuanced conversation. Nah, man, it's a nuanced conversation. And basically, nobody will argue with me because I am a celebutant. You know, I'm in the celebrity system already, as far as they're concerned. They don't know who I know. They don't know, you know, what power I might have. And unfortunately, everybody in the system is just superficial and fucking skittish and shit. I like I'm reluctantly in the entertainment business. I'm a comic book writer. I'm a musician. Like, not, I've never signed with any of the major labels. I don't trust them. Every single time I've tried to get to one of these major labels, they've basically wanted to turn me into Bon Jovi. And I'm like, no, I'm a freedom fighter. That's like, I don't write love songs. That's not my thing. I mean, I write love songs sometimes, but that's not my focus. And they want to, like, you know, make me sexy and like, no. That's like, that's really the opposite of what I'm going for here. So coming up in the business, I've really been an outlier, but I have watched, it's a complete, this is a lack of a better word, but this is what they did to the Soviet Union. They come in and they try to terraform the culture. And they've done this through DEI. DEI is diversity, inclusion, and equity. I am a non-binary, fucking non-normal man who wants everybody to be fucking accepted and be able to do whatever the fuck they want on planet Earth. However, I am not some pushy, whiny bitch like these idiots that they have fucking online spouting all the thing. It's literally designed to divide us. In X, they've had us in rooms where we would be fighting with each other. They call them rooms. They're separating the people who might agree. And it's a little rooms where we can all fucking bite each other's faces off. It's literally awful.
Well, much like yourself, I've always considered myself a leftist. Like, I've only ever voted for one guy for president. It was Ralph Nader. So it's like I'm an environmentalist.
I'm looking at the Green Party shit and. Yeah, I love Bernie Sanders. You know, I believe that he believed in what he's talking about. You know, it's like anything we can agree upon as a group, you know, can work as a society. It's just like nothing works if we're just constantly at each other's throats
and fighting each other.
Yeah. And it's so terrible because there's so many things that we're so lined up on. And it's like, you know, I do this show called Everything They Don't Want You to Know. And we were just talking about, you know, vibration and polarity in the past two episodes and the law of polarity. We're living in a polarized mind that, you know, is all one thing, but one thing distributed in many different ways. And we're all vibrating. And a vibration is a move from there to there. And what's that? It's a swing. And wise people understanding this would be leading us from the center, bringing us the most centrist lefty and the most centrist righty and making progress from the middle. But the wise people do know this, and they've instead chosen to lead us from the extremes on either side, which is a recipe for civil war and disaster any way you look at it. So there's just like this complete intellectual disconnect going on. And I like really peeled out. Like I realized at a certain point, I wasn't getting jobs because I knew too much. It's funny. I've done very little hosting on television in the comic book world, even though I've done fucking cosplay contests and Hall A panels and, you know, every other fucking thing, whether it's Chris Claremont or Avery Brooks or, you know, whoever it might be, like the biggest people in fucking geek culture. But in Hollywood, when I would get in there, it would sort of be like, this guy knows more than me. Get him out of here. So I would be advised by agents to, you know, like pretend like you don't really like know anything. So I would go in and I would like keep it buttoned up. And there was this crazy culture change where they would start, you know, there's a lady who tells a great story. And I had a similar one. I'm forgetting both of the stories, but it was something like, I remember being asked a question about like sort of Batman and like, you know, like why he was a bad guy. And like, I was sort of like, what are you smoking? Like what do we do? I thought this was a, Is this an anti-comic book show?
I mean, I personally have issues with Batman, but I'm sure they're not the issues she had. I'm a hardcore libertarian, so the surveillance stuff always weirds me out, but that's never what they're pissed about.
But this change has been going on for a while, and prior to this, there was some legitimate change that needed to be made. Guys like Ike Perlmutter, who, you know, is maybe not as black a devil as he be painted, but people like him were like, girls don't sell. Nobody wants a girl toy. You know, nobody wants a black toy. That's not always true, you know, and you do have to take risks sometimes. And Black Panther proves that wrong. And Black Widow proves that wrong. However, as a generality, there was.
Well, and Ike Perlmutter was also the one trying to make Black Panther for years as a movie. Originally, it was Wesley Snipes, so he knew, he knows.
Well, this is what I'm saying. So like the way they've painted him as a bad guy, it's like, It's like he was a part of a system that was operating a certain way. And in general, you found that as a writer from a young age, you saw people, they didn't really love it if you had your lead was a girl. They didn't really want your lead to be multiracial. You know, they wanted a white male lead. That was definitely something that was happening. The overcorrection that has taken place since then is all because of DEI, which is much more tyrannical than an avoidance of your lead being, you know, multiracial or a woman. Now there's rules. And the moment rules are put in place, a pattern emerges. People don't like patterns in their entertainment. The moment you can predict what is happening, like this is why Furiosa just bombed, because the audience just seeing the trailer said, I predict this entire film, and they didn't go to see it. And they were probably wrong. Like, I saw it with my kid. We really liked Furiosa a lot. But
I heard a lot of people did.
Yeah, but it's gotten to a point where the cyclical nature of these DEI points being the fingerprints being on everything we want. And I mean, the audience is just keying out.
I always tell people I remember when Jessica Jones first came out, that first season I loved. I was a fan. I'd never heard of Jessica Jones. I got into close to Marvel and I fell in love. And then that second season, they came at men so hard. I think I stopped watching in episode 3, never picked it up ever again, because so you can't attack me personally every episode and expect me to continue watching. And eventually I just stopped watching Marvel altogether.
You know what? You got there faster than me. Now that you say this, I'm remembering something. And I realized that my vitriol towards She-Hulk was pent up frustration for the second season of Jessica Jones. Because I felt the same way watching. I love Alias. Alias is one of my favorite fucking books of all time. And I remember watching the second season of fucking Alias going, I made you, you motherfucker. This thing is a fucking thing because I fucking went to the comic book store every fucking month and I bought a copy of this fucking book and I told people to read it. And now you're sitting here using it to tell me that because I have a dick, I'm some fucking stupid thing. Fuck you, book. You know, like nothing makes me more upset than having talking to the people who fucking built the building and telling us that we are shitty. Like, fuck you guys. Get the hell out of my fandom.
I always go back to, you know, they're telling us we have no strong female characters. And I'll be honest, my favorite comic book character of the 90s was Tank Girl. Tank Girl was the most fun thing I'd ever seen in my life. So it's like you're coming at me. And like you said, we helped build this thing. We helped make these women characters powerful. We helped give them a place. And then you pretend that like, oh, we're the enemy now. It's like, well, okay, you treat me the enemy. I'll be the enemy then. That's what we can do.
Well, people don't realize that these are periodicals too. Like Tank Girl doesn't exist just for a moment. She exists in the cosmos of comics. Storm exists all time. Like, it's, you look at comics and there's a shitload of powerful females. What the fuck are you talking about? What are you smoking? This is insane talk.
So we've talked so much about this and you've given me so much good content here. I can't wait to put this out, but we've talked very little about what I'm going to assume is going to be something that's going to make me say, fuck the culture. I just want to read a good comic book that's going to tell me a good story and be a little irreverent in that. Based on the title, probably a lot of irreverent. But tell me a little bit about Fucking for the Future.
Well, I hate nudity on covers. Like, in the way that it's being done in general on Kickstarter. Because oftentimes it's being used as a tool to sell the books, because it can be a tool to sell the books, but it doesn't have any place. It's like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, you just took the clothes off of your main character. This kind of changes the way your audience is experiencing your main character, doesn't it? And that is a problem for me. Like, literally, when Merc Publishing was doing my Guns and Angels books that I was doing for them, and they were making these nude covers with some of my characters, I would sit there and I would go, all right, how do I get this into the book in a meaningful way so that I can like actually like explain this? Because I don't like that she's being depicted like that, because that, you know, like there's a problem with titties. They're soft. You know, titties make you look soft. It doesn't make you look hard. It makes you look soft. So when you're trying to depict a character as hard and then her soft bosoms are exposed, doesn't always like do that. You know, granted, sometimes you can get it, like, you know, you got a girl on a bed with a blade over her head and her titties are out, and like all of a sudden, you know, you can juxtapose images and you can do things that are cool. But it definitely changes the experience. Like, but what did I just say? I said a knife and a thing. Like, that's telling you some character. That's telling you a story. That's not taking anything away from the character. To just all of a sudden, there's a version of that cover where she's being a mechanic where her titties are out. Like, oh no, titty mechanic, because she's totally doing that all the time. Like, for me, that undermines the narrative and like kind of fucks up your book. And like, as a writer, that's the only part that I have control of. I hand it off to my artist and they do the thing. And if I am undermined on that fundamental of a level, like for me, that's like taking my legs out. So I set it as a challenge after that stupid Jenkins book made all that money to come up with an idea for a book where nudity would be built into the concept so that I wouldn't be betraying my lead character by showing them naked. And I actually like did myself a number of levels better than that by the end of it. And, you know, essentially on planet Glon 1,000 years ago, the men and the women decided to go separate ways. And the women went to the other side of the planet, formed a matriarchal paradise where they cloning other girls, you know, the young girls, and coming up through the through the ages using robots to build this like beautiful harmonious civilization. Meanwhile, the men, they go celibate and they crack open their genetics because they get really smart and they crack open their genetic code and they rewrite their genetics and they turn themselves into these big kind of Bigfoot creatures. And they write it into their genetic code that there will be no more penis envy ever again because each generation's penis will be slightly larger than the previous generation's penis. So that'll never be a problem. So now, 1,000 years later, some of the three-legged men have penises so large that they've been forced to live in the oceans and now roam the oceans in renewed freedom. So the men are living in the wilderness, and they haven't seen a woman in 1,000 years. It's producing asexually, but apparently written into their genetic code still, like they're still producing sperm just in case the women ever decided they wanted to come back. And so the women have built this power armor to go and collect sperm samples because the men are these giant three-legged Bigfoots and the women are these like petite little boobless things. And the princess, Princess Dickhouse of New Glon, she volunteers for the program because nobody wants to do it. Nobody wants to go out into the wilderness with these men. And she's the princess and everybody thinks that she's like, you know, prim and proper, whatever. So she's like, I'm going to volunteer. I got to do something for my country, you know, kind of thing. And now she's out piloting this little power armor. You know, she's like in the front of it and it's got expanding boobs and it's all these different things that the power armor can do. You know, to attract a man. But the problem is it's been 1,000 years since the men have seen a woman and they don't even know what it is. They're not interested in it at all. So the women, like, they have no real sexual desire towards the man, but they need the man because the man has the sperm. And the man, he doesn't fucking know what he's looking at. He's like, eh. So it's like a Wile E. Coyote cartoon between the sexes.
Oh, this just sounds ridiculous in all the best ways.
It is completely ridiculous in all the best ways. And I mean, I cannot wait to write issue two because issue two, some crazy shit going on in issue two. I'm really excited.
How big of an arc do you have planned for this, out of curiosity? It's one of the things as a reader I do find is that I personally like short runs because I like knowing ahead of time, like, okay, if I go into this, what kind of a story can I experience? And if it becomes more than that, that's great. But like, I've been too screwed over as a fan by authors like, say, oh, I don't know, Mr. Game of Thrones, George R. R. Martin, who is never going to finish the story that he conned so many people into becoming in love with. So it's like short runs. I like, man, get me to the end. Get me something that kind of wraps up tight and we'll be good.
Yeah. Well, you know what? That's the great thing about this. Cause like to a certain degree, I was only going to do one. Like I'm just like, it's funny. It gets the concept and then you move on. But then we've just been having so much fun with it. It's become like, you know, it's very much like the Goon or something. You know, each one is just an installment in the ongoing shenanigans of this basic premise. Of course, as a writer, I can't help. I keep coming up with sort of deeper levels to things that are going on in the story. And I'm like, oh, wow, over time, this is going to be quite an interesting web woven here in my ridiculous story. But my focus is just on entertaining the fuck out of us. Because like it's just such a funny like I'll reveal some of like my second issue like in the second issue, because we just mentioned in the first issue that because of the genetic thing of the penis growing, that some of the three-legged men have had to return to the water, and now and he draws one of the aquatic three-legged men, you know, with his dick swinging in the background, and I just. That was like a throwaway line kind of thing. But I'm like, nah, man. All right. Because we end the first issue with the Bossy 2 makes its debut. And the Bossy 2 has a mouth like this. And so I decided that I want the second issue. First, they fly over this field of these three-legged men who are standing on their penises. They're using their penis as a stilt. And they're just like in meditation. And they're like, what's that? Like, that's some sort of ritual. Some of the, they sleep like that on a stilt. And then they land on the beach and they find all these three-legged men who are sunning themselves. And she's going to sneak up onto the three-legged man's penis. And they're like, one of the three-legged men looks back and he sees it. And he's like, what's this? And he like taps the other one on the shoulder and he looks back. He's like, what's this? And the other one taps him on the shoulder. So strange. And
I'm sure this isn't in any related, wait, but I'm getting such an Attack on Titan vibe to this thing right now.
Oh, well, I mean, it's another. So, but then the robot goes pump and the thing clamps down on its penis to start pumping. And the three-legged man goes, ah, like he has. He's running off into the ocean, dragging her behind him, and he's swimming through the water, smashing her into the coral, you know, and just every story that she has is just going to end with her flying into the air and like crashing through some trees, and like the power armor's broken again, back to the drawing board. All right, we'll try it again later, see if it works.
I love it. Well, Jesse, I want to thank you so much for coming on. It's been a great conversation. Once again, I cannot really wait to put this out to people.
Thanks for having me, Nikki. I'm so sorry for being late earlier. My stupid computer in the time zone.
No, you're good, man. Where can I send people? What's the easiest place to get people to buy a copy of this?
Yeah, well, you know, you can go to Kickstarter and you type in fucking For Our Future. Or if you want like a really nice, simple kind of preview of like all the art and stuff, we have it set up on the website for Blacklight District Studios. That's my comic book publisher. It's BLDSTS.com. BLDSTS.com. So yeah, so you can go there and you can see like a whole preview of it and stuff. But I'm on Twitter. I'm cool as Geek JBS, and of course he was talking about if you're a geek culture guy, every Wednesday and Saturday morning I do coolest picks, movies and TV shit that's like great and like other stuff like that, and then just commentary on what's going on in the industry, and you know, and just like the generally speaking the way Hollywood likes to try to adapt the shit that matters to us.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Do you fancy yourself the next Tolkien, Lewis, or Barker? Maybe you just have something subversive to say. Hopefully this podcast is helping you. But maybe your ambitions are just a little bigger than you can handle on your own. Head over to IronAgeMarketing.com and let Nikki P. help ensure your book doesn't release to nobody.